Jeanne Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mike Coughlin, President and CEO of McKinney Flavelle, and today is 9/11/2020, and welcome to our Hot Commodity Podcast Series. It is Holy WASDE Day, and I'm joined by two guests today, Kevin Combs, Vice President of McKinney Flavelle. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, hello, Michael.
And somebody that I am so grateful to have back on the podcast, and that's Nicole Thomas, Vice President, Information Sales and Services. Hi, Nicole. How are you?
Hey, Michael. I thought I was going to get a drum roll or something.
Oh, you want one? We could do one.
Yeah.
Would you like an 80s hairband drum roll?
You've been watching too much Cobra Kai.
Ah, I love that. If you haven't checked out that series, everybody, Cobra Kai is an amazing series, especially if you're a Karate Kid fan. So anyway, I'm going to spoil anything, but let's do the drum roll, Kevin.
It's good to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you back.
Thank you. Thank you.
So we're going to throw you into the fire with the WASDE report today. And we talk about corn, soybeans, and sugar. But first, I'll say two things. One, in anniversary of 9/11, we just wanted to remember all the people we lost during that event and thankful for all the first responders, everybody that was involved in that and helping that situation. So not to be forgotten, those folks. So second thing is I have Nate told me a riddle this morning. Oh, and I wanted to run this riddle by you guys, if that's cool.
This is how you reintroduced me to the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, Kevin, if you want, we can have Nicole try to solve the riddle rather than you.
Oh, yes.
That would be good.
Okay, yes. Cool. All right.
Okay, I'm ready.
Here we go. David's parents have three sons, Snap, Crackle, and
Pop.
No, David. David's parents have three kids.
This is that whole 80s thing coming back, see? Because you know, I grew up in the 80s eating Rice Krispies, and that pop was going to be the first thing that came to my mind. That's not fair because Nate's too young to remember that.
You know,
so it's an easy riddle for him.
Yeah, it was. It was. He couldn't believe I got it wrong. I said pop, too. So anyway, speaking of popping... Oh, I love my transition. Speaking of popping, the corn futures market has popped up over the last few weeks. Why don't you give us your perspective on what the WASDE report said today and what we're expecting moving forward?
Yeah, good questions. A great way to bring me back into the podcast is on a WASDE day, you know.
And on a Friday, too.
On a Friday. Only been out of this for a little while. But, you know, I'd say the WASDE more or less met the market's expectations. You know, everyone's been waiting to see how USDA would handle the impact of last month's derecho event, something that occurred too late to appear in the August report. And, you know, frankly, the drop in production seemed reasonable, at least at this stage. You know, taking 500,000 acres out of what was expected to be harvested seemed fair. And considering Iowa usually has some of the highest yielding acreage in the country, accounting for some of that loss in Iowa with a reduction of average yield made sense as well. But what the market may or may not have, you know, completely accounted for was the offsetting reductions to demand. You know, everyone's been following the strength in export demand. And in fairness, maybe that number goes up additionally in the coming months with more Chinese buying should that surface. But the reduction to the feed and residual and ethanol demand categories pretty much covered that increase in export demand and some. So, you know, the bottom line impact was about a 250 million bushel reduction in ending stocks. Now, I'll talk a bit more about that in sort of our clients only piece of this podcast, because I think there's a few things to consider looking at these numbers and then kind of comparing that against where corn futures are trading today and trying to, you know, sort of interpret what this rally has been and whether or not it can be sustained. So we'll get to that in a moment. How's that sound?
That sounds good.
Awesome. What about soy? You want to hear a little bit about soy?
Absolutely.
I'm on a roll. Let me keep it going. Now, you know, as much as folks were waiting to see what was going to happen to corn, it was the soy or the soy complex balance sheets that offered up, you know, somewhat of a distressing picture. So soy ending stocks for 2021 fell by 25% versus last month. So again, everybody sort of focused on the corn piece of it, but this one was more substantial relative to the balance sheet. And it came both in the form of more demand for 2019-20 that reduced the carry-in by about 40 million bushels and a nearly 1.5 bushel per acre reduction in yield. Now, all this occurred without a major change to the demand projections for the current year. So, you know, that leaves a little room for, you know, maybe a little more strength in exports or something like that to tighten the stocks number additionally. And I'm not saying that, you know, we saw a horrible ending stocks number, but relative to last year where we were closer to 600 million bushels and then 2018-19 when ending stocks were pushing a billion bushels, it does stand out. Now, for soybean oil, ending stocks are also lower, and again, due to lower carry-in. And, you know, amazingly, ethanol has struggled during, you know, COVID and everything that's come along with it. But soybean oil and biodiesel production seems to be on a tear. And, you know, we got the June numbers now. And soybean oil usage for the month of June was 747 million pounds. That's a pretty high number. It's a pretty good number. Now, for the time frame between January and June 2020, we've got total soy oil usage at about a little under 4 billion pounds, and that's up 7% versus 2019. So it's going to get a little weight on it from the end of last year, but all in all, looking pretty strong there. And then soybean oil exports have been higher too. Cumulative exports, we're sitting at about 2.4-ish billion pounds, and that's up about 39% from 2018-19. So in other words, you know, the soybean and soybean oil balance sheets are two to watch closely in the coming months. And in fact, if you buy corn, you should be watching soybeans too, because they may actually be a major driver of corn futures moving forward.
Got it. Okay, shall we shift over to sugar and Kevin?
I'm ready.
All right, let's do this, Kevin. What did they do to sugar?
You know, I don't know if we even should be talking about the S&D numbers with all the things that have been going on.
That's true.
Outside of sugar. I mean, well, I guess weather, you could kind of say that could be tied into the balance sheet and what's going on. But, you know, it's like tropical storm after tropical storm forming in the Atlantic.
Yeah.
Keep on coming, keep on coming. We had, obviously, Hurricane Laura go into Louisiana. Fortunately, it just scathed Louisiana, and you know, it hit a category 4 storm. The storm surge ended up being about 5 feet instead of the 10 to 20 feet that was projected, since it kind of skirted on by a little bit and hit really just the western edge of Louisiana and into Texas. So we escaped a lot of damage. You know, there were still strong winds, there was some flooding, rains, etc. But you know, basically what we're hearing is Louisiana growers said, hey, there was some damage, but we were actually more optimistic than what the USDA was previously. So anyway, take it all into account. And the USDA ended up leaving Louisiana production unchanged this month versus last. So, you know, we had good news there. We did, however, in Louisiana have a little bit of a fire at a refinery. So that was obviously impacting the sugar market a little bit. People are concerned. We had a lot of processors start pulling offers, wanting to know what that meant from a capacity and availability of refined sugar. Sounds like things are starting to go well there and they're operating again. So at a reduced capacity rate.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, given that they're operating and we're hearing as much, you know, they hope to be up to operate about 80% of their original capacity. Given that, and you know, maybe you know, continue to run their existing refineries around, I think it's not a non-event, but it's not a market-altering event at this point. So that's good. Looking at the other numbers, you know, we're kind of looking. Hey, the beet crops, the processors are starting to operate early. Things are starting to look good. You know, hearing some reports of some entities talking about maybe even having record production for themselves. Thought we were going to see some boost for beet production. USDA actually ended up with a little bit lower drop in beet production, 34,000 tons. Not significant, but I think, you know, if weather keeps playing out well, I think there's actually some upside to current numbers, and we could see production surpass 5.2 million tons instead of being underneath. The other little change, after Hurricane Hanna, last month USDA cut cane production in Texas by 40%.
Wow.
Typically hurricanes, you know, we've seen damage in the past. Usually it's like maybe 5%, 10%, but they went really aggressive. Well, this month, not only did they undo that reduction, but they've actually raised Florida up, and it would now at 142,000 tons. So net-net, from a production standpoint this month, we ended up increasing production 27,000 tons despite that drop on the beet side. And then the other big change is really all reflected around imports. And, you know, we had a measure where the USDA increased the imports 101,000 tons for 2019-20. And that's a large reflection of the new quota that they announced, 100,000 tons to the raw sugar TRQ. And, you know, just a lot of different changes in there that really resulted in a big loss for Mexico. We have basically a 191,000 ton reduction of imports for Mexico as a result of the increases in production and the increases in imports, most of which hit in 1920 crop year, but also the little bit for 2021. So net result, Mexico's quota is going to be down to 188,000 short tons raw value. That works out to probably around 775,000 metric tons of exports for Mexico. And given they're going to have a big crop next year, returning from the drought decimated crop, you know, it's looking like they'll have a big surplus to restore. So all in all, you know, from a sugar standpoint, again, it wasn't necessarily market altering in the numbers and what we saw there. I'd say, you know, bigger loss for Mexico than anything you'd see in the U.S. market. But, you know, some encouraging changes from the supply side.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Nicole, and thank you, Kevin, for a great WASDE recap. And those IQ platform listeners, please stay tuned for the extended version that is on our IQ platform that you can access there for more commercial information about what all this means. And if you're not a subscriber, please contact us and we can get you set up on at least a test drive, right?
You got it.
And go from there. And Nicole, it's been great to having you back to the podcast.
No, it's we been good you. Coming back. I missed you guys too. I missed everybody. This is great. Love Fest.
Well, again, as I always like to say, live with an attitude of gratitude. Enjoy every moment with your friends and family. And until next week, take care, everybody.
That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney Favelle's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Favelle.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.